This is the second hour of my chat with Alex Ramone. To listen to part one, go back and listen to the other podcast. If you've already heard that, then enjoy this part two.
And so I produced a show and I put together this show. And after I did it the first time. I sold out about 750 seats in this theater in the Bay Area. Jim flew in from Burbank and saw my show there. And afterwards, you know, it was okay. It was fine. It wasn't great, but it was the first time I'd ever done my own show.
Yeah.
And it was different because now, as opposed to being, you know, the star of a production, the star of a show, I was now, the whole show was on my shoulders. On Ringling, half or more than half was on my shoulders.
Okay.
But if I really wasn't that great,
it's still going to live.
Yeah, the people are still going to like the tigers and the elephants and the clowns and everything else.
Mm-hmm. The show will go
The
on.
Show will be great if I was great, and hopefully it was. But the whole weight of the show wasn't on my shoulders. And in fact, Nicole said that to me. And Nicole said to me the first time she approached me, she goes, "I think this would be a great step for you." And she said verbatim, I still remember, she says, "The whole weight of the show," speaking of Ringling, "the whole weight of the show will not be on your shoulders. Most of it will be, but not the whole show. But it will be a great step for if and when we put the entire show on your shoulders, you'll be prepared for it."
Right.
And, you know, if and when, who knows if that will happen or whatever. But she was saying, and she was absolutely right, is that I got the experience to be able to handle the weight of the show on my shoulders. And so I did that, and then I started booking my own tour. And I realized, okay, I'm going to do a tour of the Bay Area, and I performed in three cities.
You had to book the hall and everything.
Everything. Hmm. And so I sold
the tickets.
I sold the money. I did the advertising. I did posters. I performed it. I produced everything.
Mm-hmm.
I did 100% of it. And I had magicians email me and message me, name magicians, saying, "Who's booking this tour?" Because they're wanting to interest
it.
Yeah, want to be a part of it. How do I do it? And I said, my response to them is, "You're going to hear what you don't want to hear. I'm writing the checks."
Yeah.
And then, of course, once people found out, they go, "Oh," and they're not interested anymore.
Hmm.
Because, you know, people want, "Oh, tell me the guy who I talked to book me."
Yeah.
You know, and this goes back to creating your own market. And what Jim says, you create your own market, no one can ever take it away from you. So now I book a tour, and I'm expanding my tour to 15 cities this year. And I just did another tour this year. I did eight cities this year. Or I should say last year, sorry, 2013.
Yeah, 14 now.
2013,
14.
I did eight cities last year. And 2014, I'm doing 15 cities.
What period of time? A week or?
Basically, a month? Okay, so
let's back up again because we're.
Yeah, we're back. We're kind of getting ahead of it.
Okay.
Tahoe. So basically, I got.
2 years ago.
Yeah, 2 years ago, I was putting this tour together. This would have been in 2011. I had just been off the circus, off the road for a period of time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm putting these shows together. And then Tony Clark is that fourth guy that I would mention that was really, was really influential, to me that mm-hmm. I knew when I was a teenager. We kept in touch. He saw me on Disney. He saw me on Ringling. And then, we connected and he said, he had a show in Tahoe. Mm-hmm. Lake Tahoe, and it was a variety show. You had like four or five magicians in there, three or four magicians in there.
I think it was part of America's
it was like
Greatest
Masters
Magicians.
Of Magic
Masters
or something like
it had
that.
Been a scene on TV kind of a thing.
Yeah, it was kind of like one of those things. And he said, "Oh, Alex, can you come in and do a week here? Some of these acts can't, you know, can you come fill a week?" And I said, "Yeah, absolutely." So I said, we went out to lunch, and I said to Tony, I said, "You know, Tony, I'm happy to help you out. I'm happy that, you know, I can do 15 minutes for you." Because he says, "Just do 15 minutes." I go, "Okay, I'm happy about doing that. That's fine." But that's not what I do. I do a full show, and I don't, you know, work with other magicians.
Right.
I am the show, and I said...
I'm not just part of the variety act.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I'm not a variety show. I do my own show. I do 90 minutes, and that's what I'm doing right now. And he says, "Okay." And then I said, "Well, let's talk." And we kind of talked, and basically I said to him, "Why don't we put me in Tahoe?"
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "Okay. Let's talk about it." I then booked the castle, and Jim and I did a week at the castle together. And mm-hmm. Jim did a spot, and then I filled out the rest of the show. And I did, you know, we were in the palace, and Paul Reeder and Tony Clark, who are the producers of my current show, Illusion Fusion, here in Lake Tahoe, came and saw me, and they saw me do about 35-40 minutes right after the show. They came and said, "All right, we want to open in Tahoe next month," And I was this would have been like end of November, early December 2011. And basically all that work that I had done the year, booking those tours and building the show that Jim and I were working on to create, led me to the castle, which led them to see me, mm-hmm. which brought me here to Tahoe. And I've been here in Tahoe now just for the last 2 years, six nights a week.
Yeah.
And
you just celebrated the second
anniversary mm-hmm. on January 12th. Mm-hmm. And that's what led me here. And it goes again back to.
And it was going
to
be just a 2 month contract with extension?
Yep, exactly. We were originally signed. They said, let's just do 2 months, see how it goes.
Yeah.
We came in here, and I think the second night, the casino and Paul and Tony said, would you be interested in going longer? And I said, yeah. And we did a couple months at a time, and then went through the summer, mm-hmm. and then we did the first year, and then we talked about doing a second year, and now we're talking about maybe even continuing into a third.
Wow. So, are you thinking about doing that, or have you got something else you're going?
Okay. No, I mean, so.
Because you're talking about the tour now.
Yeah, exactly. So meanwhile, so when I was in Tahoe the first year, it was building the show and making it seamless. And because it was a build, it's not like when you put a production show together, you have a huge, huge budget and you put it all together at one time, like what you do with a circus or Disney. Here's rehearsals, a Broadway show.
Yeah.
They have all the money. They say, okay, rehearsals are going to take place for 5 weeks and then we open. You know, for someone like me, you know, the show is assembled piece by piece.
Yeah.
It's you add a new illusion in, and 3 months later you add another one in. And then maybe a month later you add something new in, and then 6 months later you add something else in. So from when I opened here in Lake Tahoe 2 years ago, the show is different. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. New material. The show is better. It's polished more. I've done, you know, over 600 shows in the past 2 years here in Lake Tahoe.
I would certainly think it would be.
Yeah. So hopefully.
You learn.
Yeah. So, I mean, and all the while, I work with Jim on all these things, you know, mm-hmm. everything. But so last year, I decided, I go, you know what? I need to do a tour. I need to book my own tour. Because if what happens, just like what happens in show business and entertainment, you know, show business is a series of waves. And you catch a wave and you want to ride that as much as you can. But if you paddle out to surf and no wave ever comes, you're going to be out sitting out there for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And you ride whatever wave it is as long as you can, and then you go back out. So sometimes you're waiting longer than others. Sometimes you ride a big wave and you come back out and then you hit another big wave right away.
Right.
And that's what happened to me on Disney and Ringling. And mm-hmm. in some ways, Tahoe too.
Tahoe too, right.
Mm-hmm. But I realized, well, now I'm at a point where, because on Disney and Ringling, I mean, Ringling Brothers, I did, you know, 600, 500 plus events a year, including the PR. So when I said I did over 750 shows, that was over 750 performances of Zing Zang Zoom, of 3 hour shows in 2 years. That did not include all the PR, the interviews and television and the radio and the red carpet. You know, so you're talking about, I did easily over 1,000 events in the 2 year time on Ringling.
How many hours a day would you say that you were working?
Oh man. Well, on Saturdays, we did 3 shows a day every Saturday. So you're talking about 10 hours of show time, not 10 hours of backstage and you're working.
Right.
It's 10 hours of show
actually being
of audience.
Yeah, audience
in mm-hmm. watching mm-hmm. at every Saturday. 10 hours every Saturday of an audience being there watching.
And you have to be just as fresh and
absolutely
excited in every show.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And I always had this, you know, people always ask me, and the thing that I was asked more than anything else when I was on the circus was not like most magicians get, how do you do that? Well, they would say it, but they didn't mean the same thing. They go, how do you do that? And what they meant was, aren't you tired?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I would always answer the same thing, not yet,
mm-hmm.
you know? That was always my answer. Aren't you tired? Because so many people would say, and I don't drink coffee. I don't drink soda. I don't drink caffeine. I don't mm-hmm. do Red Bull or anything like that. I just, you know, and people would ask me, aren't you tired? And I, not yet.
High on life.
Yeah. And you just, you know, I love it. I mean, if I didn't love it, I wouldn't do it. I promised myself once I realized that magic was my career and it was my, this is what I do now for a living. I promised myself, because it started as my hobby.
Mm-hmm.
If it ever became work to me, I'd quit. I'd rather quit and have a great hobby, and I'd rather sweep the floor somewhere else than turn what I love into the grind.
One of the questions that's often been asked of me by friends is, once I left the, you know, 9-to-5 workforce and then pursued what was my hobby and my avocation to now be my full-time profession,
right.
Did you find that it didn't line up to what you thought it was going to be, or are you still having as much fun with it? And I said, actually, even more fun. I mean, I'd loved it before. I am really in love with it now. You know, I just still can't get enough of it. And now I'm really living the dream that I wanted, you know, and the dream has turned out to be exactly what I thought it was going to be.
That's,
you know?
And that's great. And that's what, as magicians and as entertainers, we get to experience. I mean, you know, for me, like I said, I'm the event that, you know, every night, six nights a week, people are going and buying tickets and paying to see me and my show. And I get to be the excitement for them.
Right.
I get to be you are the highlight of our vacation.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, wow. So how cool is that? That I'm a part of the best time that they had this week, this year, this vacation.
Right.
And I get to experience it every night.
You create memories. That's right. Yeah. That'll last for a long time.
So
let me go in a different direction over here then for a moment. That is about marketing.
Sure.
That we were talking before the broadcast here of how that you had used, you know, the word of mouth, basically, and set up a little stage out here. Yeah. And so each day for during the summertime, go ahead.
Yeah. Yep, during the summer, I told the guys, I said, you know, we need to do PR shows out in Heavenly Village, which is this nice location just maybe two blocks away from the casinos here in Lake Tahoe. And it's an outdoor mall. There's restaurants, there's shopping. It's right at the base of the mountain. There's a gondola that goes up to the top of the mountain. So, I mean, it's really heavy traffic.
Heavy traffic, a lot of
heavy tourists. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people around. So we approached Heavenly Village and we said, we're going to do a free show here. And then they said to me, well, we'd love to do that. And they said, how many days would you be willing to do this? And I said, every day.
Yeah.
And they're like, what? And and so that's what I did. We set up a stage. We have big signs and banners and boards up that say free show in Heavenly Village at 2 o'clock every day. So every day in the summer, I did 6 days a week. Except for Wednesdays, because we don't have shows on Wednesdays. 6 days a week, I'm in Heavenly Village every afternoon. I do it about a 15-20 minute show. I do a raffle, give tickets away every night to my show at the casino that evening. And then, you know, that night I do the full show with the illusions and everything. So, I mean, I was doing 12 shows a week, one in the village is for free, promoting my show that evening. To buy tickets and sell tickets. And I mean, I think that's so important. And this goes back to the point of, you know, you need to perform, and you talk to anybody, whether it's Lance Burton, whether it's Jeff McBride, whether it's Matt King, where every single person, they say, perform as much as you can. Just do it and do it and do it. And there is no secret. That's it. You just have to be, and you know what's on my phone? If we look on my phone right now, my wallpaper on my phone is a quote from Steve Martin, and it's just be so good they can't ignore you. And that's just it. The only way you can get good is by doing it. I've had a lot of magicians message me saying, hey, can I intern with you? Can I apprentice with you? And, you know, I want to learn. And I always say the same result. I said, what do you want to do? Do you want to be a magician? Do you want to be good? And the answer is, yeah, I want to be a good magician. I said, then don't apprentice.
Yeah.
Because, yes, you'll learn a lot.
From that person.
You'll learn a lot. Yeah, you'll learn a lot from me.
Yeah.
You'll learn a lot from whoever you apprentice with or whoever you learn. But you're not going to get good.
Mm-hmm.
Because the only way you can get good is by you performing yourself. So I'm not saying don't have a mentor.
Sure. Right.
What I'm saying is have a mentor. Let him help you and give you advice. But you know what? Go out and do it, because that's the only way you're going to get good. So and this goes back to my tours that I'm booking now. They're all word of mouth. When I talk to people, they said, you know, how are you marketing? How are you advertising the show? And I said, I'm not. The only way, all my tours, and they've been very successful, and we sold out. And we went up to Washington and Oregon. We did a West Coast tour this year. And all of my shows, every person in that audience that comes to see me on the road are 1 degree away from me, meaning they have either seen my show or someone who's seen my show told them about it. I do not advertise. I send out an email blast, and I post on Facebook. And that's it.
Yeah.
I do zero advertising, and I sell the shows out, and it's busy, and it works, and it's great. It's very successful. And I'm expanding to, again, like I said, 15 cities, and I do zero advertising. It's all word of mouth. If you have a good product, you have a good show, people want to experience it and share it with people. So every single person that comes to my show, you know, and I ask them, I said, how many have seen my show before? And usually maybe a fourth of the audience raises their hand.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, what? And because the other 75% of the people who are seeing me for the first time, people bought them tickets. This happened to me a lot on the road, because at every show I do a meet and greet as well. And at the meet and greet, I always ask, where are you from? And how did you hear about the show? Every single person I ask that, even in Tahoe. And the reason why is because I want to know, and I'm well traveled, especially mm-hmm. in the States, that I've been to most of their cities, so I can relate to them. So sure. immediately I can connect. And then I can also find out, oh, I'm from Seattle. We're going to be in Seattle. Sign on my mailing list, you know, mm-hmm. and I can mm-hmm. get them. I say, how'd you hear about the show? And I'll, many, many people say, well, I had friends see me in Tahoe and they bought me tickets to your show and said, you have to go. And that is one of the biggest compliments anybody could see, is that somebody else, new friends in these cities that I'm performing in, yeah. found out, bought them tickets and saying, you have to see this guy when he's in your city.
Yeah.
And that's how I do my tours. And it's yeah. all word of mouth.
A couple things before I forget. One sure. is that I don't know if it's you or someone just recently told me, I thought it was a great quote, and that is, repetition makes reputation.
Yeah.
And so the more often that you're doing a show, that you're going to start Absolutely. To create a reputation because of being a good performer. And then second of all, that something that you had said last night that really kind of struck me, that I don't see many other magicians doing, if any, and that is of encouraging people actually to take photos, saying no flash yeah. photography or video, but uh-huh. Would you also, and then you reiterated that a couple of times, make Absolutely. Sure that it's going to be on Instagram, make sure, you know, at Alex Ramone yeah. Magic or whatever,
yeah.
Put it on Facebook, and so this way it is being tagged.
Yep.
So you encourage people to actually, as opposed people. To usually saying, you know, no flash photography, no kind of photography whatsoever. No. So I think
we
it's
don't,
great.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't – you know, times have changed and magicians
That's
have
it.
This.
It's a new marketing attitude.
Yeah, times have changed. And I've sold tickets on Instagram. I mean, I've posted on my tours. I've posted photos on it. My Instagram is at Alex Ramone. If you go on my Instagram, basically I had some shows and I took a picture of sales. I took a picture of the house, the tickets available, mm-hmm. or like, hey, I have this one day. We're almost sold out. I just post a picture. And again, I don't do any marketing. I don't do any advertising.
Yeah.
So the only way to know this is to be following me.
Yeah.
And what ended up happening is I saw, and I'm not even kidding you, it was amazing. I posted a photo because Jim Steinmeier and I have talked about this, and Jay Alexander and I talked about this, and we started saying, you know, does Instagram and Twitter and all those things actually generate sales? And, you know, we know it does for like the you know, huge superstar celebrities because
okay.
they have millions of followers
right.
or whatever. But does it actually work on a normal level?
Mm-hmm.
For me, I have a couple thousand followers on
mm-hmm.
these things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, does it actually work? And the answer was yes. I posted one photo and my sales reports for my tours, no joke, doubled. I posted
right
one photo and that was it. I got my sales report that day. I posted the photo right after I got the sales report saying, hey, tickets are almost sold out or here's the tickets are still available. I'm going to be here. I got the sales report the next day. They doubled and I didn't do anything. The only way, I mean, it wasn't like an advertisement came out, a story came out. The only thing that changed that day to that day is I posted this photo. Now, could it be someone just randomly bought tickets that day? Yeah. But when you start looking at numbers like sales doubling.
Yeah.
I mean, it absolutely does. So I encourage people to take photos in my show all the time. I encourage them to do it. The only reason why I don't do flash photography is because sometimes an inconvenient moment, if someone takes a flash and it's really bright and mm-hmm. it hits your eyes, you don't want, you know, all of a sudden you're blind.
Temporarily blinded, right.
Yeah. So, I mean, you gotta be careful of that. Not for any magic reason, reason,
mm-hmm.
magic reason. It's just because I don't want
to. But there's some
blind.
Magicians, again, who feel like that they have some proprietary illusion or something they're doing and they don't want anybody else to see it or know it or whatever.
You
but
know what?
You
the
have so much original stuff that we'll get to that in a minute too,
yeah.
but go ahead.
Yeah. You know what it is though? I mean, you have to agree. You know what the other thing too is when you look at our Yelp reviews, my show became the number one attraction in Lake Tahoe, really 7 months after we opened.
Hmm.
And on Yelp and TripAdvisor, and when you talk to any of the concierge and all the hotels, we are the number one attraction, be it, you know, besides the lake and the mountain, as far as anything else here. And I mean, it's really amazing. And I would encourage people to do Yelp reviews. And people are not
right.
always like, wanting to do that because they don't know what people are going to say. And this goes back to repetition is reputation. It's a caliber. It's I talk to my crew and I walk through the theater before the show every night. And
right.
I'll walk through the theater and say, hey guys, there's a straw on the ground. Or hey, there's a little piece of confetti here. We make sure we get that. Hey, this table needs to be wiped.
Mm-hmm.
Because the show begins and their perception begins as soon as they walk through those double doors.
Right.
And not only do I have to be, you know, on point with my show and my job, but it's the whole experience. It's them walking in and sitting there and going, okay, this isn't all right. They're already making preconceptions of what it's going to be.
Yeah.
So I take it very seriously. And our Yelp reviews are outstanding. If you guys want to see some of Yelp reviews, I mean, again, these aren't solicited. These are real reviews. And in fact, someone posted on my Yelp review when I see it, it said, like, these are not paid for. These are real reviews. And Yelp has filtered some of my reviews, and I asked them why, and they said because they were too good. And I'm not kidding you. I mean, I feel very honored and blessed, and it feels funny talking about it, but I mean, there isn't a show, and I've looked, there isn't a show, be it in Vegas or New York City, that has the amount of reviews that we have with the five stars. A lot of them have 4.5. Really good shows have 4.5.
Right.
But when you're talking about, we have over 400 reviews. No shows that have that amount of reviews on Yelp have five stars. None.
Wow.
We're talking Cirque du Soleil. We're talking Broadway shows.
Right.
And I mean, and I it's an honor. But also, I work very hard to keep those up. Mm-hmm. You know.
Well, talking about original illusions, and I know that it's your relationship with John or Jim, that like the opening thing last night, I'd not seen that before.
Yeah.
You know, with it's kind of like a cube zag in a way. There's so many things that are different.
It's an original illusion I've been performing on. I'm the only guy in the world. It's called Heartless.
Okay.
The only magician that has the illusion right now. And
it's a cross amongst many different things.
What makes it so interesting is that it's the first illusion, when you think about this, that has no straight edges. So in design, now we're going to talk about material and design. So basically, when Jim and I was talking about the show, I told him, I said, the show needs to be designed. And fortunately for me, aesthetically, because most of the time when you see an illusion show, it's not designed. It's you have an illusion here that's this, and you have this illusion that's green, and then this one that's yellow, and then this one that's red, and this one has like some weird, you know, interesting thing on it, and then you have whatever, and the magician's costume changes, and the girl's costume changes. And when I said to Jim, I said, my show, if Apple were to make an illusion, what would it be? We know it's going to be black, white, silver, or gray. That's it.
That's their color, sure.
That's it. Yeah. Nothing else they do. I mean, now they have that, you know, the color phones and everything, but that's not Apple. Anything you want is black, white, silver, or gray. That's it. And I told that to Jim. I said, I told him verbatim, I said, I'm the color of the show. So everything needs to look like it belongs to me. So when you look at my show, you realize
your red skinny tie,
exactly.
You got your red suspenders, you know, they're
red hanging. Is our accent color.
Yes.
Red is our accent color. Everything else is black, white, gray, or silver. Mm-hmm. And Megan, my assistant, she wears red as an accent, but everything else.
And she changed costumes.
And she changes costumes.
Matter of fact, my wife mentioned that. Hey, she changed costumes.
Exactly.
Said, oh, she did, didn't she? That's so subtle.
Exactly. And well, you know what? But what we're talking about aesthetically is that that way people might not be able to consciously think this, but subconsciously they know this is a show and it's fluid and it is. The transitions are there.
Well,
everything
just when you're wheeling out the table and handing things, I mean, you're still talking, and and it was an easy transition. And it wasn't like you're waiting for something to be wheeled in behind you for the curtain to open.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
That's the point of transition. So when we talk about material, Heartless, you know, we designed it, or Jim designed it, I should say, with those colors, black, white, and gray, with the red heart. And that really set the tone of red being our accent color.
For the whole show.
And for the show. And I have a lot of original material in there, and all of which I've worked with Jim on. I mean, Jim Steinmeier and I talk about all new material, and we're already right now we have three other things that we're working on that are all original.
The light bulb kind of knocked me out. I mean, I had the theory, and then it's like, no, wait a minute, no.
Toccata for light bulb. That routine, my iPad routine, the sawing. Mm-hmm. You know, all of these illusions that we're doing.
Well, sawing. You know, I did not go to the collectors, it's not the workshop, but it's the
History conference.
I understand that they did that illusion. Walter Blaine was telling me about this egg illusion of Jarrett's, and when you did it, I thought, oh man, I really heard about this. I really wanted to see it.
Jim is the only guy that said on it. And Jim did it at the History conference.
Okay.
And we talked about
Was that the same one he used? Even?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Huh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
that was a Guy Jarrett.
Guy Jarrett's Guy Jarrett's design. And the thing about it is what makes it so good, and this is what goes back to what I said about, you know, Heartless, no straight edges. And I mean, it's angled and it's and it just looks different. So what happens is when you have an illusion on stage, whether it's a zigzag or a cube zag or a modern art or whatever the case may be, okay, illusions are quote unquote boxes.
Right.
And they have straight
angles.
Edges.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, you know, angles. Mm-hmm. They have angles. And when Jim designed this, you know, he wanted to do something kind of fresh. And he you know, came up with this concept of this drawing and this sketch, really. And I have the original sketch that he drew. And it was just, you know, was this shape. And in fact, Jim took out a patent and owns the patent, the rights to the design of Heartless.
Okay.
So Heartless actually is patented, and Jim has the patent.
You know, it kind of looks like almost as a molar.
Yeah, you know, people said that.
Yeah,
but the whole point is that when the curtain opens on this, inevitably, okay, it is an illusion, like many illusions, that a girl goes into this cabinet, something happens to her,
right,
and then she emerges fine.
Yeah,
you know, unscathed. I mean, that is a classic plot in magic,
right?
Okay,
mm-hmm.
And there's so many different illusions that do that same idea.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that when the curtain opens on this, you look at this and going, I've never seen anything that looks like this before. So you know immediately, the audience knows, again, maybe not consciously, but subconsciously, this is new. This is fresh.
Yeah.
And the audience can tell, and especially now with YouTube, when we're talking about photos and YouTube and the internet, people have seen everything.
And you got a nice little running gag all the way through. That was a good one.
That was good, yeah. And that line happens organically, too. I mean, there's always a moment, okay? So that's what Heartless was. And again, a lot of the show, and we'll talk about material. I mean, a lot of my material in my show is original to me. I'm the only guy that does it. Jim and I work very hard on that.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically that was a good one. That's my tagline during the show. Because there's always this, and how that began, there's always a moment, okay? After an illusion, after a trick, after whatever happens, where the audience, especially when it's a really good trick, it really fools them. There's a moment there.
You know,
can blackout. There's a blackout.
The dumb looks.
And lights come back up. And there's always this weird moment. It's like this awkward pause. It's an awkward silence, right? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
Because people are kind of looking at you like, what just happened? And they don't want to say anything.
Yeah.
They've already clapped. They've already done what they're going to do, but they're just kind of waiting. You're kind of like waiting, and it's supposed to be going, well, da-da-da-da, and going on. I broke that silence, so I'm always like, that was a good one. And I say it kind of under my breath, almost in the spirit of, I mean, again, the only way I can describe it is in a spirit of Doug Henning, meaning that he was just as amazed by the wonder.
Exactly.
The audience knows that I'm going,
good analogy.
That was amazing, because I'm amazed by this stuff.
Yourself.
I don't have this. Exactly. Sure. I don't have the amazed wonder that Doug Henning did.
Sure.
I'm not trying to duplicate that in any means, but my thing is, I think this is cool anyways, and it is cool. So I'm telling you, hey, that was good.
Yeah.
You know it was good. I know it was good.
Yeah.
That was cool. And you have that moment with the audience.
Right. Now, see, that's what I'm saying. It's part of the funny part, because it relieves the tension, lets them know, wow, that was a good one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing. You know, a lot of times whenever that people don't know how to react, and it's like when you're doing close-ups sometimes, that you tell them what's going to – they should say later. So after I do this, you're going to say, that was the most amazing. You're going to tell your friends tomorrow. I saw a guy last night, and you tell them what they are going to say. So afterwards – they're going to say, well, that was amazing. The next day, they're going to tell people the same words you've already told them. So you're conditioning your audience.
Absolutely.
That way.
And to be honest, the audience does say that. I mean, there's moments, and you see in the show that there's that running line where it's coming out of a blackout, and I just kind of look at the audience.
And they'll say
it. And they'll say, that was a good one. Or they'll say, that was a great one. And now the audience, and when you have them doing that, and I have people tag me, and they'll hashtag, when they tag me in a
good
photo,
one.
They'll hashtag, that was a good one. They'll hashtag moments. And you know what? That's the point of why you do those things.
Mm-hmm.
And so those become those transitions. And if the audience if the audience does the transition for you, now it's completely seamless.
They bought into it.
So now I'm going, that was good, and that was a good one. And then they do it, that was a good one. They just did your transition for you.
The fourth wall is completely broken.
Exactly. And now you're gold, because now whatever you do next is going to be – I mean, obviously, you have to do good magic.
Well, yeah.
But I mean, you know, that was the thing. And when I told Jim when we were designing the show is I said, I want great tricks, great magic. I want good tricks. And, you know, it's been –
not just corny puzzles that people are trying to figure out.
I want good material. And I said to him, I go, even if I'm not good – I want the tricks to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a good performer coming off Ringling, of course.
Yeah.
But I said I wanted my material to be really great, top notch.
Mm-hmm.
And we chose material that was going to reflect that. It's going to be like, this is killer stuff. Because in the end, you know, Jim has in his lecture, he always said, you know, people would leave seeing a magic show. And this has happened. I know all of us have heard this before. that someone would go see a magician. They go, oh, he did this thing. And then they go, was he good? And they go, well, he fooled me. So he must be good, right?
Yeah.
And there's this thing that, well, your magician, the job of a magician is to fool you. I don't care what you say. As a magician, your job is to fool your audience. That's it. Mm-hmm, okay. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, putting your personality into it, making it entertaining, making him laugh, having those moments, of course, adds to the show. But people will say, well, he was a good magician. I don't know how he did it. That is what to them is a good magician. It's not, oh, he's really funny. He's a good magician. Oh, he's really funny. He's a great comedian, right?
Yeah.
He's a good magician. He fooled me. That's it. And the same thing that Marvin Roy always has said. You know, people said, it's not what you do, it's how you do it. And Marvin Roy says, I don't believe that at all. It's not just how you do it. It's what you do and how you do it. And you have to have good tricks. You have to have good material. End of story. Now, you need to – the perfect marriage between a good show and a great performer is this is what you want. You want really good material, right?
Yeah.
But you want to be just slightly better than it. Because if it's the other way around, if your material is better than you, I mean, I've seen it a lot, and people have seen a lot where you go, man, that guy is, he's okay, but the tricks, man, I don't know how he does those tricks, but he's all right. And again, it could be subconscious to an audience as they go, well, he's okay, but yeah, it was really good. I don't know how he did that. The worst, I think, is actually when you're so much better than material. I've seen more guys that are really good and doing really bad material. And you're going, yeah, you're really funny. I like you, but, you know, do something really good and it'd be great.
That's interesting because a lot of people will say, I don't want to do magic. I want to be an entertainer. I want to entertain them. And you're saying you can entertain them, but you should entertain them with magic because it should
be
the mystery.
If you're a magician.
Otherwise, if you're an entertainer, why not sing? Why not,
I think it's a misconception of what people, when I don't know who are really kind of started on this, like, oh, it's not what you do, it's how you do it, or, you know, you need to maybe, I mean, it goes back to his Tarbell. Tarbell, of course, talks about, you know, entertaining an audience and stuff. And I'm not, obviously, I have those books, I've read them and everything else, but it's, you're a magician. If you want to be a magician,
do magic.
Do magic. And yes, you want to be good and entertain them. Of course. Of course. But same thing, like I said, Marvin Roy, he has that DVD out that was on Steven's Magic, and it's Mr. Electric, and he gives a lecture. Yeah. I watched that almost weekly. I think I did weekly on the circus. Every train run, I put it in. I just listened to him give that lecture. If you don't have that lecture, Marvin Roy, one of the greatest guys, listen to that lecture.
Right.
A showbiz lecture. And Steven's Magic, had it as part of their series. And Greater Magic series.
Right.
And that's just it, is that, you know what? You have to fool them. Have the material. Fool them. Now, you want to be entertaining on top of that. But this is why when Jim in his books – the guys back in the 20s, Thurston and Herman,
like
and
Hiding the Elephant, and all
those things. Mm-hmm. They would steal things from each other just to get the best trick.
Right.
And now, for some reason, magicians kind of go, well, it doesn't really matter the trick. It's you entertaining them. No, you want to entertain them, but you have to have good magic. You have to. And that's kind of the goal of it. I mean,
well, then you, in my opinion, you almost become a clown because there are some clowns who will do magic, and if they haven't rehearsed it or whatever, it's like, hey, it was supposed to be funny anyhow, and it's goofy.
No, it's belittling.
Yeah,
I mean, I say magic.
I say
take it seriously. Yeah. Take it seriously, and I do. I take what I do very seriously, very seriously. And people who know me well know that I do. And it's not okay for something will go wrong. Things do go wrong, but it's not okay.
Right.
To let something go, oh, well, no, that's okay. It's fine. It happens. No. Yes, it happens, but the job is to make sure it never happens again.
That's right.
So
what can you do to avoid that from happening?
Exactly.
And you learn from your mistakes.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so when we were here and Paul and Tony wanted to at first, because we got all these reviews of saying how funny it was, they're saying like, oh man, the show's so funny. You look at our Yelp reviews, you look at our TripAdvisor reviews, you talk to anybody around here, they go, man, the show's really great. It's so funny. It's really funny. I laughed a lot. And at one point, Paul and Tony goes, oh, we're going to put magic, comedy, and illusions. And I said, well, I told the guys, I said, no, you're not. I said, I'm really uncomfortable with that. I said, I promise magic and wonders and amazement. Mm-hmm. I do not promise comedy. I do not
promise
laughter.
That's a byproduct, maybe.
Exactly.
Okay.
And I said, in the minute that you start marketing that and you telling people that what you're going to do,
they'll come with some false expectations.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I said, all I promise is magic and illusions and wonder. So, I mean, that didn't happen, that really quit. And I said, because it's so important, because it's, it's, you know, I want to people to be amazed, and all those other things that they get during the show is great. But, you know, we're fusing choreography. We're fusing illusion and magic and dance and costuming and humor into a show. And that's why we call it Illusion Fusion, really. And so basically, that's kind of what we're saying about material is get strong material. Not every trick is good. And we all know now there's a whole branch of good magic that is only designed for camera.
Right.
You know, there's a whole market now that is YouTube magic, really.
That's true.
And it's completely different. So, you know, than doing a real show. And
real street magic, it seems like it's being sold. A lot of stuff that's it's good for doing on the street, but...
Well, you could, it's just impractical. I mean, even the stuff that you see on TV, I mean, you know, it's very rare now. And I mean, it's not a bad thing, but I think that, you know, magic is cyclical. Magic has its trends. And right now the trend is to do YouTube magic and those kind of things. And it's not really trendy to have your own show anymore. It's not like before with Doug Henning, everybody wanted to be on stage and do a show.
Sure.
You know, and then Copperfield, everybody wanted to do the big illusions and do vignettes.
Right.
You know? And then with Blaine and Angel, everybody wanted to do street magic. Well, you know what? And then YouTube happened, and now people are doing YouTube magic, and you have these guys doing amazing things that have 2 million hits, and you go, well...
That's because it's fast. You know, it's like reality television or something, and because that we have short attention spans as well, I think, more than before. And so you're looking for a quick gratification, and YouTube can provide that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, right then and there. Mm-hmm. I'm a fan of raw talent. Mm-hmm. That's what I love. I love raw talent. I'd rather see someone who's really talented and hold my attention for this amount of time, an hour, hour and a half, or whatever it is, than see a huge production show. And I was a part of the production shows. My sister now currently is in Cirque du Soleil in Vegas. So, I mean, I've seen them all, you know, and I appreciate them all, but I would rather see raw talent. And this is what I ask myself when I see a performer, when I see another performer, you know, 5-10 minutes into the show, everybody has their thoughts on this performer. They're kind of gauging on, do they like them, whatever. And I always ask myself when I see a performer, if it's a magician or something, a different art, performance art, but I always think, would I want to spend an hour with this guy outside the show? Would I want to go have dinner with him for an hour?
With this guy, yeah.
Would I want to? Most of the time is no. Really, really.
Because they're limited in their what they have to talk about, or they don't think they're interesting.
The only reason why you would want to spend an hour or go to dinner with somebody is two reasons. One, you like them.
Mm-hmm.
Two, they're interesting and intriguing enough to want to go out to dinner to find out more about them. The second one is harder because someone like, you know, I'm just saying Miley Cyrus.
Okay.
Miley Cyrus, right? I don't know if I really like her because I don't know her, but she's interesting enough to want to observe her
for
an hour and go, you are fascinating and weird. What is – okay.
Yeah.
And you're willing to spend an hour with her, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I see Miley Cyrus. I actually like Miley Cyrus. I'm a fan of her. I think she's great. I mean, really. I mean, maybe that's confusing everybody's thoughts on what everything else I've been saying.
Well, look at where she is now and what she's done. I mean,
she's a smart girl.
She is.
The reason why I say that and the people around her are smart
is
because
Britney Spears.
Exactly. Controversy.
Lady Gaga.
Yeah. Controversy made her one of the most fascinating people of 2013.
Yeah.
And that's her business. And that's what she knows, and she did it to a T. That's why people are making, you know, Jay Alexander.
She's playing us.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Everybody looking at her going, oh, my gosh, whatever. Why is it that her ratings when she does interviews right now and on SNL, everything ratings is up with Miley Cyrus because she's the hot product.
Absolutely.
And she did that to a T. Mm-hmm. Jay Alexander told me this, and it was really kind of interesting. And this is what led to the red tie and the red suspenders. He said to me when he was, you know, first starting out, he always thought, if I – became famous and I can and someone wanted to spoof me on SNL, what would they do?
Oh, well, that was what Murray Sawchuk had told me, you know, like with his spike hair, you know, and or his glasses, you know, kind of a thing.
If someone's going to spoof you, what would they do? And Copperfield had it great when he was, you know, Broadway, is the white shirt and
the flowing hair and the wind. Yeah, exactly.
And that.
Yeah.
That. So you do that, you know who, oh, that's David Copperfield.
Yeah.
So for me, I thought, well, if someone wanted to do that, what would they do? They put a red tie on, red suspenders, and they would do whatever.
Yeah,
but they have the red tie and red suspenders. People know exactly that's me.
And that's why you got the t-shirts.
And that's why the t-shirts have the red ties on it and everything. So that becomes iconic. And you realize that's what people know about you.
Starting to brand yourself. And that's an important thing, I think, in branding. That makes you separate from somebody else.
And this is the other thing about kind of going back about word of mouth and marketing and creating your own market. See, when I do shows now, especially outside of Tahoe, Tahoe's a tourist spot too. So, of course, we have people coming in wanting to see a show, and they buy tickets to the show. They hear it's good, and they come see me, okay? But when I'm out on tour, like I said, everybody's one degree away from me. The thing is that people aren't going to see a magic show. Mm-hmm. They're not going to see a magic show. They're going to see me. And so for magicians to think that, oh, I can just go and perform at this theater and do really well because Alex was here because, oh, it's a good magic market, that's completely wrong. I took years to build those markets and build the clients and build the customers and build the fans in those locations.
Right.
That's why they're going to see me. So that's why, you know, all these magicians aren't really performing in all these other cities or these, well, I say cities, but like these theaters in the same way that I am, because they're my market. These are my customers. And it's really interesting to the venue, to the theaters, because the theaters are going, well, it's not part of our season and we're not marketing this at all. And all these people just showed up. Where did these people come from?
Yeah.
And it's all my people. And so it's kind of an interesting thing. And so that goes back about branding and having a good product. Ultimately, you have to have a good show. That's it. Hey, have a good show. Be good. And like I said, that material has to be unique and original. And I find the value in original material now. So like I said, like you've seen my show. Most of my show is original material. I have some classics in there, but I also have some twists on there as well. Jim and I are working on three other routines that are all original that nobody's done. And the other thing about original material is they can't duplicate it. See? Because you can't. And I'm not doing just, oh, it's a new presentation. It's
no,
it's you can't,
radically different.
Yeah, you can't duplicate it because you don't know what I'm doing. In fact, the iPad routine
I was about to talk
example.
About the iPad.
Yeah. It fools magicians. And magicians don't know how I do it. And they're completely fooled by it. And they may think they do, but they don't. And I've had magicians say, oh, well, you're doing this. And I go, well, no. And it's what Teller has said. Teller, what makes a good illusion, right, is you have to take seven different steps to accomplish one illusion. And the more steps you have, the more impossible it is to recreate it and reconstruct it. Because you don't know, right, when, like, wait, oh, well, he's doing that. Wait a second. Well, he's doing that. But how is he doing
right.
that? Okay, well, this is a technique that he used to get that, but I don't know. And Copperfield does that, combines methods. Mm-hmm. Penn and Teller do that all the time, you know, and that's what the iPad in particular, we're doing so many things.
Try to design something to fool magicians, knowing that if you fool a magician, then you're also going to fool the public?
No, I don't try and come up with ideas to fool magicians, but I do want to
do think it's a byproduct.
Absolutely. Hmm. I do want to do things that magicians won't do.
Okay.
Meaning that, like, I told, you know, when Jim and I are working on this new illusion that's in rehearsals right now, that we're combining methods and it will fool magicians and they won't know exactly how we're doing it. Mm-hmm. They'll know the basic concept and principles, but they're not going to be able to go, oh, well, he's doing this and this and this, because there's too many steps.
Yes.
They'd go, well, he did
Can't
this and he did
that.
This.
Yeah.
And so I don't know exactly at what point we changed.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. See, that whenever that you design something and you cut off all these roads and all these paths to begin with, you kind of open up something so the audience can kind of follow you a little bit. Mm-hmm. But then they say, oh, wait a minute, he didn't do that. And then they kind of retrace their step back down that path and they go down another one. And that's not right. And then finally they're going to say, I don't know. I'm just going to give up. I'm going to follow this. I mean, I'm going to just enjoy this. Yeah. My point being is that if you do or create a trick that's going to fool the layman, the general public with that kind of a thing, then it would seem that you could go to just a little bit more extreme to fool the magicians.
Well, I mean, I think that's
because if you fool magicians, you're definitely going to be fooling the public.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. I agree with you. I mean, for example, you know, the magician foolers that I know is my version of the subtrunk. That fools magicians because they're not expecting it. You know, at the end there, they go, oh, wait, right?
Well, yeah.
See, I mean, magicians may not see. Here's the other thing, okay? What I've done on particular, like my version of Metamorphosis, is that I want genuine surprises. right? So what I do is the cell phone, okay? Magicians don't appreciate that trick for as much as what it is, okay? So basically, I have to kind of describe the effect. I have a volunteer on stage. We construct this plexiglass clear box, and I borrow their cell phone. I put the cell phone inside this clear box after it's covered, and my phone rings. They're calling me off their phone, is calling my phone, and I basically reveal my assistant is now inside this box that we assembled with her phone, on his phone, calling my volunteer's phone. Exactly. And one, that fools magicians because they don't know how I get their phone to call my phone. Mm-hmm. So that fools magicians.
Okay.
But also the thing about it is that it's a genuine surprise. It's because I set the whole illusion up with, I'm going to read your mind, and then we construct this box. I'm reading the guy's mind, and we construct this box, and I borrow your cell phone, and the audience is kind of going, I don't know what's going on here.
Yep.
But it's interesting enough things are happening that they're paying attention. It's not like they're going, I have no idea, I don't care. It's they're going, what? Okay, I'm reading your mind, you're building this thing, there's the phone. Where? So they're, what's going to happen?
They're staying with it.
And I make a girl appear. And it's like the first time that an audience has actually been genuinely surprised a magician made a girl appear, right? Because most of the time, a magician makes a girl appear, the audience may go, I don't know where she came from. I don't know how she did that.
Yeah.
I don't know how he did that. Or, wow, that's amazing. She just appeared. But they weren't surprised. They're anticipating it. They see something like this.
In this case, the phone rings first before you reveal the girl.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so they go, well, I don't know how she got in there, but they're actually surprised, as opposed to going, okay, someone's going to appear in there. I don't know how. Ah, they're there. I don't know where they came from, but they knew something was going to be in there.
It's almost anticlimactic.
Exactly. Where in this version, and same thing with my version of Metamorphosis, they know they're already ahead of you. And like magicians, you know, you do the switch, boom, I'm now on top of the box.
Right.
And now all of a sudden, whoa, and magicians go, oh, wait a second. I wasn't. And then there she is. And they're surprised.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And same thing with the audience, because the audience knew. And that's why when we were doing the Metamorphosis, I actually didn't want it in my show. I was like, I don't want it in my show. It's been seen. It's been done. It's a great illusion. Everybody's done it. And I decided finally, I go, well, you know what? If I do it, I'm going to do it differently.
With a twist.
And this kind of goes to my creative process, how I actually did a lot of these things, and even the light bulb. I hear a piece of music, like I heard this song, and I go, man, I have to put that in the show. Man, I love this song. This song really has to be in the show.
Yeah.
And I thought about it. I go, what could I do to this song? And then I thought, well, maybe we do this, and it's fast and whatever. And I came up with this idea, and I was sitting in the theater with Megan, and I described her. I go, okay, got it. This is what the effect is. Boom, 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 you're gone, and boom. Right? And I kind of describe what's going to happen.
Right.
And she's like, oh. Okay, I don't know how I'm going to do that. And so then Tony Clark and I worked on this together for a while. I mean, it took months to figure out. I mean, it seems so obvious now that we perform it every night.
Sure.
But it really was hard to figure out how we're going to do this.
The logistics of
that. The method of how we're going to accomplish this illusion. And I know I'm being kind of vague in all of this.
You have to come see the show.
But you have to come see my show. But – you know, that's kind of what something happened with the music. So I knew, I was like, okay, if I do the Metamorphosis, you know what? We don't have to have the things examined. We don't have to have the lock examined. We don't have to have all this stuff. Like, it's done. People get it. They know it. They get it.
Yeah.
Just get in and do it. Because at some point, the only trick really is the switch. How fast that switch is now, ever since the Pendragons. You know what I mean? You don't have to prove that this box is solid anymore. It doesn't even matter if it is or not.
It's like cups and balls that you're just waiting to see what the final load's going to be.
Exactly. Yeah. You just do final loads, and people go, whoa, that was crazy. There's a chicken in there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And exactly. So I just said, we need to get to the switch as fast as possible. And the illusion from the time the curtain opens on the trunk to the time at the end of the illusion when Megan and I are taking our bow, you know how long it is? 35 seconds. So when you're talking about it, and it's our encore piece, when you talk about that illusion, I mean, Pendragons do the switch faster than anybody, but their whole setup and their whole thing, I mean, granted, it was fantastic when they did it. It was amazing. The best, still hats off to them.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan, great, amazing. But I timed it. It was like 3.5 minutes.
Well,
I mean, granted, they're unlocking it. They're taking out the bag.
They're trying to make it into a log.
Exactly. They're making a presentation piece. I'm not in any way saying that's bad.
I understand. You're not trying to
I'm just saying
that.
What I thought. I go, well, my process is, and guess what? It does evolve. So you know what? Another subtrunk, you know, my art might be like what I try to do as fast as I can, as opposed to setting it up, examining it, putting in the bag, putting the lock, tying the thing, doing the handcuffs. It's just get in. I don't get in a bag. I don't get my handcuffs. I just get in the trunk and we do it. And so, I mean, I think that that's what, you know, maybe in another 10 or 15, 20 years, it's going to go back to a different presentation and how to examine this and do this. And maybe somebody else will find a new way to present it. But that's their choice. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, so the classics I have in my show, I do try and twist them. So that way it is interesting for an audience who have seen them before, maybe. But at the same time, you know, I'm not really trying to do magician foolers. I just, you know, the idea is to try have new material.
You don't have a whole lot of stuff. I mean, that when Mark and Ginger, Mark Halen will take off, I mean, he's got a lot of stuff, you know, or Steve Weirich or somebody's got all these illusions, everything. So I see what you're saying, that you don't consider yourself to be an illusionist, although you're doing illusions. But, you know, when you count them as far as the box, the furniture tricks, you know, there's only about three furniture tricks or so.
We have a lot. I mean, we have, I'll say one.
I was trying to think about last night's show. You know?
Yeah, I mean, we do have a lot. My goal was to create a show that would be efficient in travel and crew. So when I travel to these cities on tour, there's four of us. It's me, myself, my assistant, and I have two crew that travel with me. Four of us. We travel in a 14-foot truck and a vehicle, and it's really minimum, you know, bare minimum, because we want it to be cost effective and efficient.
Sure.
You know, and the more that we're efficient on my end in budgeting and logistics, the better it is for us. And as we do it, then we can add more stuff. Because a lot of times, you know, and this goes, I think, to the production numbers. I mean, we're adding more production value to the show. But again, at its core, the show has to be good. The content has to be good.
Right.
And this goes back to, like, when I want my views on putting the show together. A lot of times people think, I'm going to do an illusion show. You know what? Oh, and you get a smoke machine. Right? I mean, come on, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, no, you need a good quality. You have to have good content. You have to have you have to be able to deliver. Once you can deliver, you add the production elements. You add that production value.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And not the reverse. So you have to be good first.
Have to have a core show.
Yeah, you have to be good first. Just be good. There's nothing else for it. Be good. How do you get good? You have to do it. And
repetition.
And that's it. I mean, like I said, it's hard. It's hard work. But I love it too. And if you guys are passionate about it, and hopefully, you know, with what I'm saying, you know, maybe it sparks a passion in some of you, and some of you who maybe seen my show, you know, can comment or even post on the Facebook or anything like that to me, because I love reading those things and I try and respond. I have magicians email me all the time and I from all over the world, really. I mean, I just had this guy in New Zealand email me, saw something of mine, and I do my best to try and respond.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you have to send me another one, you know, if I don't see it.
Yeah.
But it's me saying, hey, I enjoy that passion. I want to share it with you. And if anybody learns anything, or it gets inspired, that's great. Because I'm inspired by people all the time, watching other performers.
Right.
And you know, I go back and I look at it going, you know, I don't try and compete with magicians. You're not competing with magicians. You're competing against yourself, how good you can be. You know, it's funny because magicians always are so, I feel,
territorial
and oh my gosh. And the reason is because you're sharing material. That's why.
Mm-hmm.
Magicians share material. Unlike musicians perform their own material. So when you go, so Lady Gaga and Katy Perry aren't singing the same songs.
No.
You know.
But Lady Gaga and Madonna might be pretty
similar styles,
similar, yeah.
Yes, but they still have their different songs. They're not sharing material. They're sharing maybe style,
right,
but not material. And I think that's where it stems from, is that magicians have to share material, and that's why original material is so important. That's why, like I said, people come to my show, a lot of it and most of it is original. You're not going to go anywhere else and see what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes its value to me. But you know, with magicians, I look at it going, you know, I'm not competing against other magic shows. I'm competing in entertainment value. So you can have your show, whether it's a theme park, whether it's at a casino like mine, or you're on tour or a Vegas production show, you are competing in entertainment value versus against sports, cell phones,
yeah,
concerts, and everything. I mean, to be honest, most shows I've seen, I would rather spend the time on my cell phone than watching this show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I went to Bruno Mars concert, which I think Bruno Mars is the best, most talented guy in the industry right now. And there was this girl. She was a young girl. She was probably a teenager. The row right in front of me. And I paid the money. And I was the eighth row. So I was like right up front.
Yeah.
So this girl was seventh row. No joke, was on her cell phone the entire time. Texting. And I was nosy. I read what some of her texts because I was like, I have to. I'm too curious.
What's so important?
I have to see what she's texting, like, during the concert. And she was texting, oh, my gosh, this show is so amazing. The concert's so much fun. It's great. I love it. Oh, man, you should be here. Whatever. And I'm like, you're crazy.
You're
not even watching. You are here, you know? And she's texting the whole time. I promise you, she did not look at the stage once. And I was just like, because she was right in front of me. And I go, this is crazy. And so anyways, but, you know, so I mean, when you're talking about competing against entertainment value, so when you're entertaining, you don't want people to check your phone during your show. And if you do a show and they don't check their phone, well, you know what? That's an A plus in my book. And in some ways, by encouraging them to take photos,
right?
You know what? That's going to feed their desire to be on their phone.
Right.
And now they're capturing you and you're going to be in their phone forever.
Yeah.
And now they'll remember, oh, that was that magic show you went to or whatever. You know what I mean? And that's kind of the point.
And then in your back of the room sales, you've got your name and everything. You know, uh-huh. At Alex Ramon.
Yep, always. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mentioned it during the show. Hey, tag me in the photos. Because, again, we allow photos. I allow photos. I think mm-hmm. when we first – people are so – especially magicians are so like, no photos. They're just used to that. When we went here, we did our VO, Paul and Tony, and I said, no, here's – I allow photos in my show. Really? Yeah, allow photos. And to be honest, my new show that I'm doing, I'm allowing video, and I'm going to encourage video. Hmm. I'm going to encourage photos. And I just say no flash again because of my eye.
Sure.
I don't want it to get blinked. And I know from experience,
yeah.
You know, doing that where someone takes a bright flash and you're like, even some of the flashes on the iPhones, man,
sure.
They're so bright.
Very bright.
For a second, you're like, wait, and you don't want to like fall off the stage or anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, you know, encourage those things because that's the new.
So for people who are going to be coming, then to kind of wrap up over here,
sure,
are coming into South Lake Tahoe, how can they get tickets? Where can they go as far as online?
Yeah, South Lake Tahoe, that's where my show is, at the Horizon Casino Resort. We perform six nights a week, every single night, shows at 8 o'clock, except for Wednesday nights. And tickets are available at – you can go to my website, alexramonmagic.com. You can go to illusionfusionshow.com or right off the Facebook fan page. Excuse me, but you can, just Google me, Alex Ramon. That's what I tell people. Because people don't frequent websites anymore. They don't go to your website. You know, they'll Google you, and hopefully your website will come up. But in some cases, your website may not come up. Your Facebook page might come up.
Right.
So just, you know, I tell people, Google Alex Ramon, and you'll find me.
And then you're going to be having a tour after that.
I have my summer tour is being scheduled right now. We're doing a West Coast tour again. We're going to Washington, Oregon again, all over California. And I will be taking my show to Los Angeles for the first time.
Okay.
I mean, I was there in the castle, but this is different. This is the full show.
Yeah, this is open to the public, whereas the castle
public,
versus, yeah,
exactly. And I've had a lot. So, oh my goodness. So many people ask me to go to Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to make that happen in the fall.
Wow. And if they want to find out more information, that's going to be on your website.
Yeah, you go to my website. Yeah, my website's going to be redesigned pretty soon here. But my website is alexramonmagic.com. Join the Facebook fan page, Alex Ramon. You'll find me on there, on Instagram, at Alex Ramon, all that stuff. You can find me. You know, nowadays, the internet, it's so easy to find me. But
sure.
I would say I do have a lot of cool projects I think magicians probably would be interested in, as well as the lay public. This year I'm working on a lot of new mm-hmm. things, and I think it will be exciting.
But you can't talk about it until it actually comes to fruition.
Exactly.
You're a coy guy.
That's right. I know. I hope you guys listen to some of this. If you made it all the way through to listen to this whole sermon.
Yeah.
If you made it through so far and you're listening, thanks for staying with us. And I hope you guys we've been intrigued, and maybe we can keep in touch and cross paths down the line, whether it's on the internet or at a live show. I'd love to keep in touch, and I like talking to magicians, and sometimes because I am by myself up here, there's not any magicians else really around.
Right.
You know, not everybody always, you know, not like at the castle in Vegas where
sure.
you're crossing paths with these guys.
Well, the name of the podcast, of course, is called The Magic Word, and so I always like to ask my guests what their magic word is. And it's not necessarily, you know, like abracadabra or something that you use in your context of your show, but it could be a life motto, something that's important to you. You know, it could be a phrase, even, not necessarily just a word. What is something that
magic word? You know what? I think that my motto of late has been, you know, don't say it, show it. Don't tell people what you want to do. Don't tell people what you're going to do. Show them and do it. Mm-hmm. And so when I, for me, example, how I used it is I said, I'm going to go on tour. I'm going to go on tour. I'm not going to wait for somebody to find me and say, I'm going to go on tour. I'm going to do it myself and you can come enjoy it. And same thing with Steve Martin's quote that I said before is be so good they can't ignore you. And then of course, that was a good one.
That was a good one. I think that's what people are going to be saying about this podcast for a long time. I should be getting some good comments on this, hopefully,
because well, there's
been a lot of really good and important information, not just about your past and, you know, where you got to where you are, but I think it's important people know about the history and they can appreciate, you know, what people are doing then now so they can find that road, to, their own road to success by seeing someone else's road they followed.
Absolutely. Every book is different. So Doug Henning's book and his story in magic is completely different than David Copperfield's. It's completely different than Siegfried and Roy, to Lance Burton, to Matt King, Jeff McBride, all the heroes, everybody's heroes. So I'm writing mine, and my chapter right now is here in Lake Tahoe and touring. But the other chapters we touched on, Disney and Ringling, are exciting too. And I wish everybody the best. And this is my last, my last little thing I have to say, because Matt King is some of the best advice I ever heard. And this is maybe to the younger generation of magicians who may be listening out there. Matt King said, you know, he was asked, what advice would you give anybody who wants to be a magician?
Right.
And Matt King just said, be honest with yourself and be as good as you can. And if you can do it, go after it. And if not, it can be a great hobby of yours. Magic is a great hobby. It's a great thing. And I encourage everybody to pursue it. But be honest with themselves. If they feel like they can be a professional magician and have their own show, good, go for it. If not, hey, you know what? It might be a great hobby that then turns into their profession like you,
right?
Later in life, and it's great. I mean, I love magic, and I love seeing magic shows and magicians, and hopefully we'll continue on this journey and our paths will cross.
Sure. That was a good one. It really was. Alex, thank you very much.
Thank you okay. so much.
That was Alex Ramone for The Magic Word. Hope you guys enjoyed it. This is Scotty out.